Edwin Black has published scores of investigative newspaper and magazine articles in leading publications in the U.S., Europe, and Israel. He's the author of 10 best-selling books, including, of course, IBM and the Holocaust, Nazi Nexus, Banking on Baghdad, and the Farhud. With more than a million books in print, his work focuses on genocide and hate, corruption and fraud, both corporate and political. He's received a series of top awards and has been interviewed on countless network broadcasts, such as Oprah and Dateline NBC. His works have been the subject of numerous documentaries, and many of his books have been optioned by Hollywood. He's also the editor of the Cutting Edge News, an online site that receives more than 1.5 million hits every month. And each year, Edwin Black's speaking tours include hundreds of events in dozens of cities. And we are very, very fortunate, I think, that he has chosen to include Regina on his list. And so with that, please welcome Edwin Black.
Your Honor, elected officials and the assembled clergy and citizens of Regina, thank you very much for coming to this important event and for allowing me to be part of it. I have three microphones on, so I hope that I'm not going to have feedback. This will be, and probably is, one of the most memorable of encounters I've had in my hundreds of events. I've met so many wonderful people here in Regina just, I guess it's only been 2 days ago. I've had about 10 events here. We had 250 Catholic students, and then we had 615 public school students at Campbell, and 400 Lutheran students, and we spoke to academicians and Rotarians, and I've met so many wonderful people here. And I just heard music of one of my favorite pieces, and it was so stirring. And last night, I found myself seated next to two people who were survivors of Hitler's Holocaust under a special little-known program. And I wrote a complete book about it. It was my very first book. And I was just amazed that they knew all of these names. So when you talk about living history, it's already living right here in this room. I've met so many caring, wonderful people. And some of the many sage remarks that I've made, that I've heard here tonight has been that this is not just to remember, but to educate. Because what's important is that this not only be remembered, but never repeated. And my purpose tonight is to explain not only what happened in the Holocaust, but how it happened, who was responsible, who profited, who got away with it, how greed, dispassionate greed, enabled and lubricated the monstrous machinery of hate and murder. And I will show you the unity and the universality of the tragedy of the Holocaust. Because in the coming minutes, I'm going to explain how in the process of creating a trap to devastate and destroy the Jewish community of Europe and eventually the world, so many other communities were swept up in this process, and all of them became victims, each with a separate number created by IBM. Now, my parents are Holocaust survivors. And I first became interested in this My mother was pushed out of a train on the way to Treblinka in that little window. She was shot, buried in a mass grave. Her leg was sticking out of the snow. And my father, who had walked away from one of those shooting pits, found her, pulled her out. They lived for 2 years in the woods. I was born in the United States. Named for a whiskey billboard in Boston Harbor. And I thought it was my imperative to not just remember the Holocaust, but to explain how it came to pass. Now, my parents and I were sitting in the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and the first thing you see when you walk in is the IBM machine. And 6 million people saw it before I saw it, and no one had asked the question, what was it used for? And I promised my parents I would find out. When Hitler came to power in 1933, and we'll get our timeline straight, 1933, Hitler came to power. 1935, the Nuremberg laws of who was a Jew, defining the full Jew, the quarter Jew, the half Jew, 1935. 1938, the infamous Kristallnacht pogrom, which was the burning and broken the broken glass and the burning stores all across Europe. 1939, September 1st, 6 a.m., World War II breaks out. And in December of 1941, Pearl Harbor is bombed. The United States declares war on Japan. Germany is the ally of Japan. They declare war on the United States. And that's how the U.S. got into the war. And 1945, the war is over in May. And when Hitler came to power in 1933, his determination to destroy the Jews of Europe required the resources of a computer. But no computer existed. What did exist is something all of the adults in this room know about, the IBM punch card. And the IBM punch card, which existed from the 1890s, stored any information on people, processes, places, and developments in the holes strategically punched in the rows and columns. IBM had the worldwide monopoly on punch cards, the worldwide monopoly on information technology. Most people admit that we're in the information age. But no one in this room knows what the information age is. And I've gone throughout Regina and I've asked that question and no one can answer it. Not even the kids in the high school. But I answered it for them. The information age is the individualization of statistics. Before IBM and the punch cards, you could count all the people in this row, but with the punch cards, we can not only count them, we can say how many are men, how many are women, what their income is, what their religion is, how many brothers and sisters they have, and we can alphabetize that. And IBM was the solutions company. They understood that the information age, some of you may think it was born in Silicon Valley, the information age was actually born in Berlin in 1933, when the individualization of statistics was brought to a new and terrifying height. And as the solutions company, IBM sought out Hitler in a relationship that that began in the first moments of the Third Reich and went all the way to the last gasp of World War II in 1945 under the direct supervision and hour-to-hour micromanagement of its president, Thomas J. Watson. And Thomas J. Watson directed, managed, and required his company to co-plan and co-organize all six phases of the Holocaust. The identification of the Jews, the exclusion from society, the confiscation of their assets, the ghettoization, the deportation, and even the extermination of the Jews. Now, there always would have been a Holocaust without IBM, because towns like the one my father came from, thousands of people were lined up in a pit or against a wall and shot by machine gun. But the industrial Holocaust, the one of the astronomical numbers, the organized one, that is the Hollerith Holocaust. That is the Holocaust that IBM made possible. And IBM sought out Hitler and said, "What do you want to happen?" And he said, "I want to know where the Jews are. Some of the Jews are wearing hats and going to synagogue, and we can spot them. And others are worshiping in churches. Their grandparents converted to Christianity. Or they're non-believing and they're regular bankers or publishers. And we don't believe a Jew is just someone who worships Judaism. We believe a Jew has got 1 ounce of Jewish blood going back generations." So they had to know. He said, "How am I going to know?" And IBM says, "We'll tell you." And IBM invented the racial census for Hitler. They hired thousands of unemployed Germans. They all went door to door in every street and Dorf in Germany. They took a massive census. IBM rented huge warehouse space. And all day and all night, they punched in the data on their machines. And here's how it worked. In column 1, they would type in your religion. Are you a Jew? Are you a Muslim? Are you a Catholic? Are you a Lutheran? In column 2, they would type in your mother tongue. Is it German? Is it Polish? Is it Croatian? Is it Hungarian? Is it Russian? In column 3, they would punch in your nationality. Were you born in Germany? Were you born in Poland? Were you born in Russia? Were you born in the Ukraine? In the next column, your profession. Are you a teacher? Are you a coin dealer? Are you a lawyer? And in the final column, your city. At the rate of 64,000 cards per hour, they could instantly identify all the Jews of Polish extraction in Berlin engaged in the fur trade. Couldn't do that without IBM. All right, what's the next thing Hitler wants to do? We want the Jews out of society. No more Jews working, no more Jews in the professions. How do we do that? IBM said, "Well, that's simple. We'll cross-tabulate our lists of all the Jews, and we'll keep making these lists. We'll refresh them, and we'll expand them, and we'll register them, etc. And then we'll cross-tabulate that against the university directories, the medical associations, the motor clubs, the baptismal records, the government rosters. And wherever we see a Jew, they can no longer be judges. They can no longer be doctors. They can no longer be any profession that they were barred from, which was all professions." And then they said, what would you like next? Well, their money. That's easy. All the banks and financial institutions are running on IBM punch cards. So they cross-index all the names that they've got against all the bank accounts, all the real estate holdings, all the insurance policies, all the medical benefits. They apply a 25% so-called flight tax. And then they get a roster of all of their possessions, their assets, their stores, their stock holdings, so little by little they can Aryanize them and pauperize the Jews. Next step, ghettoization. We want them out of our communities. We want to concentrate them in little areas. Okay? IBM is the king of traffic management. One day, all the Jews are on one side of town, two sides of town, in their comfortable homes, homes much like yours. All the families are given instructions to go across town, eight families to an apartment, into a slum. They're jammed into a ghetto. They each know the street they have to go to. They each know the address. They know the stairwell to walk up. They know what floor to walk down. They know the number on the door. The whole city in one day, no waiting. Okay? Now that we've identified the Jews, we've excluded them from our society, we've taken their money, and we've ghettoized them, we've pre-positioned them, now we want to deport them to the camps. How do we do that? No problem. All the trains in Europe are running on IBM punch cards. These punch cards were never a standard punch card. Every single punch card was unique and custom made. Some could have 20 rows on top and 20 on the bottom, and the ones that sent the trains to Auschwitz only had 10 rows. And let me be specific. The IBM facility that sent the trains to Auschwitz was run by a guy called Leon, and I interviewed him. He ran the operation at 22 Pavliestrasse in Krakow. And every day the trains would come in, the boxcars would come in jammed. 40 kilometers down, went to Auschwitz, come back empty. And then IBM even organized the extermination of the Jews. The Auschwitz tattoo, that number, began as an IBM number. That was the prisoner number. They tattooed it. Later, there were many other numbering systems. And then IBM came up with a unique program of mass murder called extermination by labor. They said, we can't just keep gassing these guys. We got to work them to death so at least we get a building out of it, a fence, a trench. So everyone was forced to fill out their job skills. I'm an auto mechanic. I'm a farmhand. I'm a factory worker. I'm a teacher. And they would cross-tabulate that with all the slave labor needs. We need farmhands. We need factory workers. We need motor pool. Then a special IBM transfer list that ran every single concentration camp victim in Europe. They ran back and forth from camp to camp till they worked them to death, and then they gassed them. And they always knew what was going on. Now, how do I know that? I have the documents. I brought them with me. Not all 20,000, but several. So I'm going to show some to you. I do this by hand without a PowerPoint because there's enough power in what I'm going to show you. These are the IBM punch cards. And as you see, they start out with a hand-done mock-up. And they say what the specific skills are. And on the side, we have the IBM logo, Deutsche Hollerith Maschine Gesellschaft, the IBM German Hollerith company. They start as a handwritten mock-up, and they finish as a custom-printed one, like here you see here. And these particular two, one is for the Rassenamt, the race office of the SS, and the other is for another office of the SS. Each one was different. No one could print them but IBM, and if anyone tried, IBM would sue them, even at the height of World War II, for patent infringement. Who speaks German in the room? Can anyone read German? This is a document. At the top, it says here, Vertrag. That means contract in German. And IBM had so much business dealing with the Third Reich, they had their own division in the German military called the Maschinelles Berechtwesen der Reichsministers für Verwaffnung und Munition. That's the machine punch card agency of the Third Reich. And there was one of these documents for every one of thousands of machines that were never sold but always leased by IBM. This document. Who is the name of the contractee on this document?
International Business Machines Corporation, New York.
New York. Yeah, yeah. And what is the date on that?
Oh, 1942.
July 1942. Thousands. Now, we have limited time, but I'm just going to show you that IBM at all times had voluminous correspondence directly from Berlin in Germany with the president of its company. So I would ask you, what is the date of that letter?
1941.
What month?
9th of October.
9th of October, 1941. And who is the letter to?
Mr. Thomas J. Watson, President, International Business Machines Corp., 590 Madison Avenue, New York.
And what's the letterhead up on top here?
International Business Machines Corporation.
These particular letters were notifying the president of IBM. They were typed on the American Embassy typewriter in Berlin. These particular letters were informing Mr. Watson, we've moved our machines out of Poland into Romania for the next census because IBM moved subsidiaries across Europe in cadence with the Nazi takeover of the continent. In 1939, they moved a subsidiary in to Poland to organize the rape of Poland. Name of subsidiary? Watson Business Machines. They moved one into Holland to organize the rape of Holland. Name? Watson Business Machines. There was an IBM facility in every concentration camp. What was the name of that facility? the Hollerith Abteilung, the Hollerith department, the IBM department. Where was it specifically? In the Arbeit Einsatz, meaning the labor assignment office. Where do I mean absolutely specifically? I mean in Dachau across the main gate. I mean in Stutthof, at the cafeteria. I mean in Auschwitz. IBM said, well, you'll never find us at Auschwitz. My friends, I found their phone number in the phone book at Auschwitz. And I went to their office in Auschwitz. It was right next to IG Farben. And the transformer for the electricity converting American to European was still on the floor. Reference was made to investigative journalism. I realize there are people in the back, and when this is done, everyone may come and examine these documents, or you can pick up a copy of the book. They're in there too. This is a prisoner card. It's just paper. But there's a lot of numbers on that paper, right? And here's a number. It says Dachau 2, right? Kripo, excuse me, Dachau is 3. Kripo is 2, yes? And here it says Lochkart geprüft, punch card verified, operator 6. So we compare the prisoner card, hold that, with the secret IBM concentration camp code list captured by the U.S. military and now in my possession and in front of your eyes. And it says here that of the two major arresting organizations, one was called Gestapo and one was called Kripo, what is the code number of Gestapo?
01.
And what is the code number of Kripo?
02.
And what is the code number of Kripo there?
02.
And when they talk about the concentration camps, they're listed right here. What is the number of Auschwitz?
001.
And what is the number of Buchenwald?
002.
And what is the number of Dachau?
003.
003. And what is the number of Dachau right here?
003.
Now, what kinds of people did IBM want to get rid of? It wasn't just the Jews. This is the original German document captured. This is the English translation. And as we see here, what is the number of Jehovah's Witnesses called Bible researcher?
2.
And what is the number of homosexual? And what is the number of Hispanics, Spaniards who are of communists? Communist Spaniards.
6.
And what is the number of clergy, such as Lutheran?
5.
What is the number of the Gypsies?
12.
What is the number of the Jews?
8.
Oh, here's another one. What is number 13?
Prisoners of war.
That's Canadians and Americans and others who were captured. So while they're making this entire sweep to capture the Jews, they're also getting in their net the Catholic and Lutheran clergy, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the homosexuals, the prisoners of war, the gypsies, and many other groups. Now, IBM knows who arrested these guys. They know what concentration camp they sent them to. They know what their personal characteristic is. And now, what is the status that IBM is recording for the Nazis that the Nazis need to know? Me too. What is Number one.
Released.
What is code two?
Transfer.
What is code three?
Died.
What is code four?
Execution.
What is code five?
Suicide.
What is code six?
Special treatment.
And what are the two letters next to it?
SB.
Sonderbehandlung. Special handling, special treatment, gas chamber. This means, ladies and gentlemen, that an IBM engineer had to devise a system that would differentiate between a Jew or anyone else who was worked to death, hung himself to death, shot to death, or sent into the gas chambers. That to configure the machinery, that to print the cards, that to train the staff, that to process the machines, that to keep printing them over and over again. You could only use each card once, like a bullet. And they had to service the machines on site every 2 weeks, whether it was downtown Berlin or the middle of Auschwitz. This is what IBM did. And this is why tomorrow morning the rabbi of this synagogue is not going to get a letter of complaint from IBM. He will get nothing. No apology, no defense, no denial, nothing.
How much time do I have left? Ten minutes.
What did Hitler, what did IBM and Watson know? Every day, the tragedy of the Jews was being documented in the New York Times. I know that you heard the story. No one reported it. Wrong. Everyone reported it. They had a complete ministry of propaganda by Joseph Goebbels, who made it a business to advertise this stuff. It was in the newsreels. Charlie Chaplin, for heaven's sakes, made a movie about it. Now here's a typical, one of the things I did in the book is whatever was in the New York Times, I found out what was on the headline, then I found out what he did the next day. If he would have lived in Boston, it would have been the Boston Globe. But he lived in New York, so I made it the New York Times. Now here's a typical one from 1937. And the headline, it's September 13th, 1939, September 13th, the war has started, the rape of Poland is on, the ghetto is up, the people are being massacred by the hundreds per day. And what is the headline on that right there?
Nazis hint purge of Jews in Poland.
Nazis hint purge of Jews in Poland. And what is the subhead in big letters underneath that?
3 million population involved. Removal from Europe viewed as benefit.
3 million, right?
3 million.
And in the jump, does it not say that how you can get rid of 3 million Jews without, and I'm quoting now, extermination is not explained?
Solution offered. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't read that.
I can.
Sorry, go ahead.
Let me borrow your glasses.
They're not good.
Yes. However, how the removal of Jews from Poland without their extermination can occur is not explained. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So extermination was in their mind all the time. Now, why did I read this to you? Just to read you a headline? No, I read this to you because I want you to know what was going on at the same time. Bring him out again.
You want me to read it or you?
What is the date on that letter?
September 9th, 1939.
Okay, and that was September 13th, 1939.
Correct.
And who's the letter to?
Mr. Thomas J. Watson.
Where?
President, International Business Machines Corporation, 590 Madison Avenue, New York, New York, USA.
Now, what happened here is the Nazis said, okay, we've got them in these ghettos, in Poland, etc. Now we need to alphabetize the names. We don't have those machines. Now, all this millions of dollars that, of business that IBM was doing, no written contracts. Why? Because they didn't want someone like me finding out about it. But guess what? The Nazis didn't trust them for the commission, and they kept tremendous notes. And I got those. And here it says, we need the alphabetizers. And the next day, there's a memorandum. And the memorandum right there says, Mr. Watson, we spoke to him on the telephone, and he was happy to let us have the machines. And here are the first machines. Alphabetizers going from New York approved to Nazi Germany with the serial numbers on a receipt. Here's a death list from Mauthausen. It's typed, name of person, number, birthday, death day. No one would know that this is an IBM document, but each one is stamped. It says, Hollerith Erfast, Hollerith Erfast, Hollerith Erfast, processed by the IBM Hollerith system. I've got documents like that from many concentration camps. And it's been 10 years, and IBM has never answered, defended, denied, or addressed the fact that it co-planned and co-organized all six phases of the Holocaust. Now, why did IBM do this? Was it because, like Henry Ford, they hated the Jews and wanted to inspire Hitler with the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which is what he did? No. Was it like General Motors, who believed in the fascist state and who built the Blitz truck for the Blitzkrieg and motorized Nazi Germany and stationed the spare parts along the Polish border and built Ju-88 bombers to bomb the Canadians and the Americans and landmines and panzers and torpedo head explosives? No, it wasn't because they idolized the Third Reich. When IBM put a new subsidiary into Poland, it wasn't because they hated the Polish people. When they put a new subsidiary into Holland, it wasn't because they hated the Dutchmen. When they facilitated the development of the V rockets destined to hit downtown Manhattan, it wasn't because they hated New Yorkers. For IBM, it was never about the Nazism. It was never about the anti-Semitism. It was always about the money. Because when it comes to IBM, business was their middle name. So, when the Jewish community here, in their ceremony, says never again, there's an undercurrent, there's an asterisk, there's an appendix to that lament. And it is, never again should we allow any company to use its innovation, its technology, its political connections, its power, its clout, its connections to afflict innocent civilians. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.